Shimon Peres was an integral part of Israel's history even before the country was founded. During a career that stretched over nearly 70 years, Peres served Israel once as president, twice as prime minister, but the highlight of his career came in 1994 when he shared the Nobel Peace Prize with the late Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin and the late Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat.
Well, wage growth is key because it is the most important domestic driver of inflation. We actually expect inflation to get back close to 1% by the end of this year.
The CEO of SpaceX and Tesla tweeted the first photos of the Raptor interplanetary transport engine shooting fire from its jets. Musk says this rocket engine will be the way to get to the red planet.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is Wednesday. Finally, it's September 28th, 2016, 5:10 in the morning. Good morning. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to another business day. We have lots to talk about today. We have later in the program, we're going to have more on SpaceX and the interstellar transport system that Elon Musk unveiled yesterday. We're going to be talking to the authors of a new book who've written specifically about this new era of spaceflight. We'll have that in our second half of our broadcast today. We're also going to be talking to Dr. Q, who's the specialist of waiting in lines. There's a science to it. We'll give you some tips for how you might be able to avoid the line at a grocery store. That is, if you want to, when you realize and you hear why lines exist in the first place. But first, let's get the latest from the WGN Market Desk this morning. As you heard Vic mentioned, the markets this morning generally are in negative shape, at least in the U.S. Dow futures pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures right now off about 17 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are off as well. Stocks generally mixed in Asia. The Nikkei is off more than 1.5% this morning. And in Europe this morning, generally higher stocks with the CAC leading the way this morning and the DAX not far behind, each up almost 1%. The situation in Europe still questionable. Deutsche Bank is still leading the decline and causing a lot of consternation. The investigation, questions about whether it's too big to fail. Also questions this morning about Brexit. The former French or the French president talking about possibly allowing Great Britain to stay in the European Union or at least help them find a way after seeing what is happening in Great Britain. And that is all of the CEOs, businesses causing problems and worry about whether or not they're going to stay there or leave. So that's definitely an issue that we'll be following as we move through the morning. A couple of big stories this morning. One on the tech front that we're following. We reported to you last week that GoPro had released a new drone, a new commercial or a drone that you could buy, a retail drone, I guess is what they call them, that fits in your backpack. Well, yesterday, DJI, the leader in drones, retail drones, sort of ruined GoPro's excitement, probably ruined their entire week. This is their announcement from yesterday.
The technology that we've developed is actually doesn't require dedicated carrying technology. It could be in your purse, your side bag. But personally, I like to just carry it on me.
The small drone not only folds up, but you can control it from your phone. It's being called the selfie drone because it's so easy to use and can fly in just a matter of seconds from your phone or a tablet. It is from a DJI, again, the leader in this area. GoPro, obviously, with headaches this morning. We saw people waiting in line yesterday for Hamilton tickets. I guess they found some tickets somewhere, and so people were queuing. That's what they call it in the United Kingdom, queuing, when they wait in line. We've been waiting in line for years, perhaps 100 years or more, and there's a science behind it. Let's go right to the MIT this morning, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. There's an engineer there who is called, nicknamed Dr. Q. Dr. Richard Larson is with us via Skype this morning. Dr. Larson, I was surprised to hear that there's actually a science behind all of us waiting in line for iPhones and Hamilton tickets, and that you are the guy that actually wrote this science. Not only science, but a theory.
Yeah, there's a science to waiting in line. I like the word Q, Q-U-E-U-E, and I spell it the British way, Q-U-E-U-E-I-N-G. I like that because it's the only English language word I know that has five vowels in a row. And apparently, if you play Scrabble, that's very valuable. In other countries, it's called lineups in Canada. And a line is the more typical one you hear in the U.S. rather than Q. So it started actually in Copenhagen a little over 100 years ago when the then new Copenhagen Telephone Company said, gee, we need a science and engineering to figure out how big to make our central telephone switch. You know, the original telephone was two boxes and one wire, so you could connect across to your neighbor, maybe your mother-in-law lived next door, and you'd want to talk that way. And then everyone said, gee, if I have a telephone, I want to be able to reach all my friends and my brothers and sisters and children and stuff. And so think of a hub and spoke system, like a bicycle wheel, and the hub is the central telephone switch, and all the wires coming in from the rim of the wheel basically are the lines from your house or somebody else's house to the central switch, and then a human operator would connect you to one of the other outgoing wires, and that would connect you. So basically the telephone company in Copenhagen said, we don't know what capacity we should have for the switch. If we have too much, we might go bankrupt by spending too much on capital investment. If we have too little, we're going to lose customers because they're not going to be connected. They'll get busy signals. And so they assigned this guy, A.K. Erlang, who was a German-born electrical engineer. He said, Erlang, figure out the math of this situation. We need some science to devise some engineering protocols for how big this thing. That's a long story. But basically, Erlang's formulas have stood the test of time. And even though there have been thousands of queuing research articles written since 1910 to 1915, when Erlang was doing his work, his formulas are used more than anyone else's that I know of. And there have been maybe 20 books written on queuing. And so there's a lot of mathematical theory on the math and the science and the physics of queuing. But equally as important as we're discovering is the psychology of queuing. And sometimes it's not actually the duration of the wait, but a lot of other things which affect humans and other entities that wait in line.
And we're going to get into that as our conversation continues this morning, Dr. Larson. We'll have you hold on. We're going to stop and do traffic here. And coming back, I'm going to, while we're doing this, shoot you a couple of URLs so you can see perhaps the future of waiting in lines. We'll continue with Dr. Richard Larson from MIT, Dr. Q, on the science of waiting in line.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, investors pulled off a win Tuesday. The Dow Jones Industrials jumped 133 points to 18,228. The S&P 500 picked up 14 points. The NASDAQ gained 48. The Conference Board says consumer confidence this month is at its highest level in 9 years. It's a promising sign that economic growth will continue in the coming months. A reading of 104.1 is the strongest since August of 2007, just before the financial crisis. Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen faces sharp questions from a House committee today over whether there was a failure in oversight by federal banking regulators involving Wells Fargo. The nation's second largest bank is accused of opening millions of accounts without customers' permission. And Tyson Foods is voluntarily recalling more than 132,000 pounds of chicken nuggets because of reports of hard white plastic found in some packages. The 5-pound bags of fully cooked Panko chicken nuggets were sold at Costco stores. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. We're talking about the science of waiting in line for today's show. Did you know that we spend about 37 billion hours a year waiting in lines for iPhones and other things? We're on with Massachusetts Institute of Technology Engineering Professor Richard Larson this morning, who's come up with the science and theory of waiting in lines. Dr. Larson, when did the actual waiting in line for social things turn to sort of a marketing strategy by retailers that we've all sort of become victims of?
Well, that's one of my axioms. You know, when I think about queuing, every person in a queue is a business opportunity. Because a queue is a captive audience, so you can sell into the queue. And if you go to developing countries, many developing countries, even in the U.S. you see it. If you're in a traffic jam somewhere and there are a lot of cars waiting to get through a red light or some congestion, even in the U.S. you'll see, and I buy them sometimes, people selling dozens of roses to bring home to your spouse or your friend. Here at the Sumner Tunnel entrance in Boston, East Boston, I remember years ago when a guy would have two huge barrels of coffee on his back, one regular and one decaf, and he'd sell you coffee into the car as you're waiting to pay your toll to get into the tunnel. And but in developing countries, they'll sell you groceries, they'll sell you all kinds of things.
And there are also, in addition to the math and the science of this, different names for these. And probably the one that's most familiar with a lot of folks, we've probably stood in line there before at Wendy's, was the serpentine line.
That's right. Wendy's prides themselves on being the first major fast food restaurant in the U.S. for inventing the single serpentine line. And I guess Dave Thomas, he was the founder of Wendy's, said, you know, I just hate, you know, guessing. If I have two or three, four lines I have to choose from, guessing which one, and then seeing people who come after me get served before me. And my customers hate it as well. And our research has shown that. So we're going to introduce a single serpentine line. And Wendy's was the first in fast food, to the best of my knowledge.
And would you say that Disney has probably perfected the line?
I call Disney the Machiavellian experts of the psychology of queuing. They have it down to a microscience. You know, even in Orlando, they employ anywhere from 18 to 22 what they call Imagineers. And these Imagineers have industrial engineering and operations research, management science, highly technical backgrounds. And they know about the psychology of queuing very well. And any new amusement that Disney's going to create, they'll put on the computer and they'll simulate it, an animated simulation. They'll optimize it, figuring out, you know, capital investment versus queuing delays. And it's quite a science that they have they've developed. They've developed that over the years since 1955, I guess, when Anaheim, the first Disneyland was open.
And over the years that you've been studying this, do you find people are enjoying lines more or hating them more?
Well, you know, it depends what kind of line it is. there are celebratory queues. And we're talking now about the iPhone 7. And some people, you know, want to have bragging rights to their friends and to their grandchildren when they're 80 years old or whatever. That, hey, I stood in line or waited in line and camped out for 3 days. I was one of the first people in my town to get the new iPhone. And the same thing for rock stars, for rock concerts, these kind of, or, you know, I'm actually going to do that myself if the Chicago Cubs and the Red Sox meet in the World Series. I'll be the first to stand in line here at Fenway Park to get one of those. I cannot think of a more iconic World Series than those two teams playing each other in those two of the most classic ballparks in baseball.
I'd have to agree with you, I think, but standing in line for the Cubs is something I would do any day. So let me ask you this. Since you've been studying this all of these years, did you ever think you'd see robots standing in line?
No, you recently told me about this and sent me some URLs that I looked at, and these are fantastic. These very cute robots, small humanoid robots, very miniature, can do all kinds of things, dance in line and do push-ups and things like this. And so these are humanoid robots, not exactly human size, to stand in line for the person who owns them and controls them. But, you know, the idea is not new. Of some entity standing in line for you for many, many years. If you do a Google search on standing in line, let's say even in New York City, there are many companies you can hire or Craigslist. You can find people who will stand in line for you. I think a typical price might be $25 an hour. And in Latin America and other parts of the developing world, it's been common practice for decades. The usual one is to send one of the house servants to wait in line for you to buy the tickets or whatever it is, buy the groceries or whatever you're going to do. And but if you don't have house servants, you would hire somebody just like they do in New York City or here in the U.S. But the robot is an interesting deviation, and it raises all kinds of fascinating questions, and I'm looking forward to seeing how that goes. It may be in the future that we each have our own two or three robots that we dispatch maybe by Uber to stand in line for us. I mean, it's a fascinating kind of thing. It could be a fictional TV program.
But if I read your research and the way you've studied this over the years correctly, it sort of defeats the whole idea of waiting in line, because with the exception of Lucy, who was sort of there through that iPad contraption, it's a way to socialize. It's a way to be a part of something. And when you're not there, that sort of doesn't do it, right?
Well, that's right. And you know, there are lines where the socializing is quite important. You know, you meet adjacent fellow queue dwellers, and who knows, maybe you can form a new friendship. Maybe even you find a friend that you start having a romantic relationship with, you know, whatever. And there are places, retirement communities in Florida, that they actually look forward to standing in line a long time just to do that. Because if they've come from snow country and they've just moved and retired to Florida in the recent year or two, the first thing they need really is friends. And so they look forward to dressing up and standing in line on Discount Wednesday in Naples, Florida, 10% off for seniors, which is a huge fraction of the population there, and they make friends that way. So, you know, lines are very contextual, whether they're positive or negative experiences.
For those people who don't like being in lines and have to do just sort of mundane things like go to the grocery stores, do you have any tips for how we can avoid lines?
Well, you know, with the grocery stores, let's say, first of all, if you study your local grocery store, you'll find that there are predictable ebbs and flows of congestion during the day and the days of the week. And if you have the flexibility to go on off days and off hours, chances are that your waiting line experience will be much better. There may be no lines at all. Then if you have to do it, well, there's a company in California called Curbside where you can call ahead. They'll get all the groceries for you, and they'll have them for you in the parking lot at a special place, and they'll load them in your car, so there's no line waiting there. There's
device.
Peapod, which will deliver, and there are others like that, deliver the groceries to you. So there's ways of avoiding the lines altogether. If you have to go to the grocery store and you have self-checkout, you have the usual human checkout lines, and you have express checkout, what people don't like to do is they don't like to play cue calculus. You know, say, oh my God, okay, I got $200 worth of groceries. I see five lines here. And then you have to do this calculation about, try to estimate which line is going to be the shorter one. And chances are, since things are so variable, you can't tell how efficient people will be paying by credit card or whatever. Do they have coupons? You know, all these sorts of things. So it's best not to try to play cue calculus. Just select one line that you think is going to go faster, recognizing that it might not, so you're happy if it does.
Dr. Richard Larson, thank you for being with us today, and I will come and stand in line with you if the Red Sox and Cubs are in the World Series out there in Boston. Dr. Q, Richard Larson from MIT, the person behind the science of lines.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. 541. Yesterday in Mexico at an international space conference, Elon Musk, the founder of SpaceX, unveiled his company's plans to send humans to Mars on something called the Interstellar Transport System. This is Elon Musk yesterday from Guadalajara, Mexico.
You can do zero-G games. You can float around. There'll be like movies, lecture halls, cabins, a restaurant. It'll be like really fun.
Talking about the colony that will be built on Mars after we get there on a giant rocket that he is designing, something that could be in our lifetimes as we move forward with private space exploration. A lot of detailed plans about the ship unveiled by Elon Musk yesterday. And it just so happens that there is a new book about this. It's called How to Make a Spaceship. The authors are Julian Guthrie, and Julian is with us today along with Peter Diamandis, who's the one of the four runners of Space Talk, also an MIT student and engineering background. Julian and Peter are with me this morning. Peter, let me start with you. Are we moving too fast? Are we moving in the right direction as we try to do this colonization of space and private space flight?
So this book that Julian Guthrie has written called How to Make a Spaceship, which chronicles my life and the XPRIZE, is all about the idea that we're heading towards a private revolution in space, where a number of individuals, myself, Richard Branson, Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, are committing our capital, our wealth, our time to open up the space frontier. And we're now alive during a time that you can take your moonshots. You can go and make things happen independent of the government. And this book, I'm very proud of what Julian wrote. Richard Branson wrote the foreword. Professor Hawking wrote the afterword, and it's been an extraordinary success in that it's about inspiring the next generation of moonshot takers who are going to privately open up space.
And also, this is Julian here, it's really, you know, in terms of the divisiveness in our country and the crazy political thing that we see going on right now, it's really an antidote to that. It really is this moment where everybody came together to create something great. It harks to the Apollo days when there was this magic created by Apollo, and, you know, it really created the brought out the best in people and made, you know, America very, very proud. It's a story about that. It's a story that will inspire entrepreneurs of all ages, and, you know, whether you are, you know, 9, 19, or 99. So it's again, it's an antidote to kind of the divisiveness that's going on now. It's a very inspirational story.
And as one of the kids of Apollo, I was a kid when that happened, and I remember it very, very vividly. It's one of those things that for a newer generation, it's inspiring to see that we're hearing all of these moonshot ideas come up, not just with real space, traveling to space, but there's a moonshot for cancer now. There's a moonshot for fighting other diseases and doing other things, and you have young people involved in that. And it's also global, which is something that one of the presidential candidates doesn't really, I don't think, get. It's going to take all of our countries together working on this if we want to get off the planet, isn't it?
So it is true that we are now taking lots of moonshots. The XPRIZE, that this book chronicles the birth of the XPRIZE Foundation, where I wanted to develop a private spaceflight industry. This is the mid-90s, and I organized a $10 million race to space and had 26 teams from 7 countries going after this. And when the XPRIZE was won in 2004, I was able to get amazing people like Elon Musk and Larry Page and James Cameron involved and on my board. And we've since launched a series of XPRIZEs. We have an XPRIZE for global learning, for literacy, for health, for cleaning up oil spills. And we incentivize entrepreneurs around the world, say, I don't care where you went to school, what you've ever done, if you solve this problem, you win. And incentives are a powerful force, right? And one of the things that we're doing, for example, in this book is, if people are interested, if you go to herox.com, H-E-R-O-X.com, we have $100,000 of prizes, like fly into a zero-G in weightlessness with me, or spend a day with the CTO of Oculus Rift, John Carmack, or fly with Mike Melville. And if you promote this book, we're putting the book into 4,000 high schools and a chance for people to win these prizes and be part of this epic race.
Julian, there's a reason why it's part of our lexicon to say, well, we put a man on the moon, we can dot, dot, dot. There's a reason we say that, right?
There is a reason we say that. You know, the book opens with Peter Diamandis as an 8-year-old boy transfixed by this lunar landing in July 1969. And it set him on this mission to get to space, and he had to do it privately. But it really was this moment in history where everything came together: bravery, technological innovation, you know, this race against the Soviets. And it was a magical moment. And I think that this book has elements of that in different ways, but, you know, certainly milestones, risk, courage, innovation, and brings a lot of that back for those who were born after, you know, the Apollo magic.
And you hit on a good point there, and that is, there are going to be mistakes. There are going to be problems. Elon Musk is seeing that firsthand, as, you know, he's had a couple of setbacks, including some vivid explosions. That's going to happen, and Elon seems to be moving on with it. That's an important thing to get over, too, right? We've got to fix these problems and move forward.
So we're at the birth of the space industry, right, of the commercial space industry. It's just getting going now. It's equivalent to the airplane travel industry in the 1920s. It's going to become so routine, so easy, that same way when an airplane now, you're pissed if it's 20 minutes late or your luggage is, you know, 30 minutes delayed. But it's a miracle of flight, and we're going to have that as we get more and more space flight. And, you know, How to Make a Spaceship, this book, which came out just a couple days ago, is really chronicling the beginning of this. And I think anyone who has a passion of space or a passion of doing big and something big and significant in their life, this is the book to inspire you to go for your dreams.
Peter Diamandis, the XPRIZE founder, $10 million XPRIZE founder, along with Julian Guthrie, the authors of new book called How to Make a Spaceship, A Band of Renegades, An Epic Race, and the Birth of Private Space Flight. It's from Penguin, forward by Richard Branson and Stephen Hawking. It is, as Peter said, just being released this week. Very timely.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:52. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are pointing toward opening losses later on Wall Street. Dow futures off about 15 points. The S&P NASDAQ futures are mixed. The S&P is lower. The NASDAQ has moved positive within the last few minutes, and so has the Dow, just now up 6 points. Let's get the latest on commodities and agriculture, and good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Another tough day yesterday for cattle producers in that futures market at the Mercantile Exchange. Live cattle futures down the $3 limit, and feeder cattle futures down the $4.50 limit. Futures two-day slide and 30,000 more cattle for sale than last week, probably working against cash prices. So those cash price bids are lower, and futures markets moved lower as well in the trade yesterday. At the end of the day, the October live cattle contract stood at $103.82. The October feeder cattle contract at $126.85, both down the daily limit, and October hogs down $1.17 at $51.70 a hundredweight. Meanwhile, in the grain trade, we did see an improvement in prices. All of the markets ended the day higher, wheat, corn, and soybeans. And China was back in the market, buying another 120,000 tons of U.S. soybeans. So for the day yesterday, we saw beans up 7 3/4, corn up 3, and wheat sales up 8 cents. A decision by a judge yesterday impacting a lot of farmers. A U.S. District Court judge in Kansas said lawsuits brought by U.S. farmers against seed company Syngenta over sales of biotech corn seeds not approved for import by China can proceed as a class action, according to that court ruling. That impacts producers in Arkansas, Illinois, Iowa, Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, Ohio, and South Dakota. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a great day as well. As we close the program today, the day ahead on our calendar, the Commerce Department releases its durable goods report for August. That comes at 7:30 Chicago time this morning. Federal Reserve Chairman Janet Yellen will testify before House Financial Services Committee about bank regulations. That'll start at 9 o'clock. Questions about Wells Fargo are bound to come up as well. Both of those could drive the markets as we move toward the opening bell.